Have you ever wondered how to make sense out of your messy life or how to live in peace in the middle of a stressful world? My name is Jamie Norton, and I want to welcome you to the Making Peace and Beyond podcast. In almost 50 years as a counselor, I have seen a lot of life happen, and this podcast is going to cover all of it. So thanks for joining us while we explore life's struggles and how to live in the peace, joy, and freedom that Christ died to give us. I am really excited that you've joined us today, not just because you're here, but because one of my oldest and dearest friends is with me today. So this is going to be a rowdy episode.
Oh boy, here we go.
Chris Meekin, I'm so glad to have you here.
Well, thank you. Thank you for having me in beautiful Northeast Ohio on the coldest day of the year so far. Is that true?
Well, you brought the weather from Florida. Yeah. Is that correct?
Yeah, it is correct. I just want to say one thing before we start. This could be the heaviest coffee cup I've ever lifted in my life. Is this like so that you stay strong when you're drinking coffee in the morning? Is this
right.
Your workout?
It's all the exercise I take these days.
You
want to tell us a little bit about yourself?
Thanks for being for having me. My name is Chris Meekin, and I lived in Northeast Ohio for 62 years. The last 62 years, I go to Jamie's Church. Attended there pretty much my whole life. I'm married for 44 years. It keeps on
changing. Bless her heart.
I know. It's worked out well for me.
It is.
I have four kids, all adults. But we moved to Florida to kind of help my wife. It's an only child. I'm one of 10. Nine kids, but two parents. But that's 11, but one died. So anyway, lived here my whole life, and we decided to go down to Florida and have found just a great life down there. And so we stayed down there. We're doing ministry down there and all kinds of things. But I've been sober for 44 years.
And, 46 years.
46 years.
Because I've been sober for 45 years,
yeah.
And you got a year more than
got
me.
Got sober in the Navy, of course, and it was a very thing. The problem was once I got sober, I didn't know how to live. I had no tools on how to live. And about 15, 20 years into my sobriety, I still had anger and frustration and everything else like that. And we met up, Jamie, and she brought up Making Peace and Beyond. And that has just changed my life. And so I'm indebted to Jamie forever. Whenever I come up to Cleveland, we see her. But Making Peace and Beyond has changed everything for me.
You know, I wouldn't be in Cleveland had it not been for you, because you were the one who figured out how to do the housing and how to get me here and help me set up this house.
Well, desperate people do desperate things, okay? Like, I don't care, just get her in there.
So we have this mutual indebtedness now.
Yeah.
And we've been involved in so many things together. We've been involved in building the recovery program here. We've been involved in really promoting and doing Making Peace and Beyond. And now we're involved in podcasting.
In podcasting.
I mean, who would have thought?
I do podcasts myself. I do one down in Florida with a young man. He's 21 years old. We call it Old School, New School. And we talk about spiritual things from an older guy's perspective and a 22-year-old's perspective. And it's really kind of fun.
You got me to do one of those with you.
It was amazing. It was our best one.
Old school and new school.
Yeah. And but today we were talking about spiritual scars. And every time I talk to Jamie, it's usually, you know, someone's popped open a scar and said, what is that from? And so tell me, when you do Making Peace, what do you mean by making scars or are scars?
I think so often we have wounds that we collect along the way. You know, all of us are born into a story, and that story often is a story of pain and dysfunction. And with people who would like to but don't know how to love well. And so, you know, we don't, we're hurt. Sometimes we're bullied at school. But the wounds of life tend to form us and shape us into who we become, and often we don't talk about those.
Right.
I mean, there's a lot of shame around our woundedness and our scars for some reason. I don't know why.
But and everybody has them.
Everybody has them, and if those who don't deal with them often develop a false person, a false personality that they live out of. And
so cosmetic surgery.
Exactly. I mean, appearances become important. What people think becomes important. How people see you becomes important. The avoidance of pain and conflict becomes important. So people who have unaddressed wounds often seem incongruent when you see them. One of the things about growing up in dysfunction is if you see somebody who their behavior and the body language is different, there's an incongruency, we tend to close down and step back and not feel accepted, you know, because you and I particularly tend to be pretty radical in that.
I gave a message. I do a men's group too. I'll try anything once. That's why I have so many scars, okay? I got scars all over the place. But I did a talk 2 weeks ago about, in Revelations, about not so much about, you know, the churches and how we're all gonna, you know, how bad we're doing, whatever. But it was more about how the glory of God is and how when Jesus comes, I mean, it's gonna be amazing. And that whole section. And I got done, and this guy, he's a writer, he's just a great guy in his mid-80s, mid-70s, and he says, I'm just going to tell you one thing. Anytime you talk, I definitely know the person who's talking. And I'm like, I think that's a compliment, you know?
It's a big compliment.
I think it's a compliment. He goes, because I know who you are, and I know the man that is speaking about the topic, and I know that it's true from your heart, and I think that that's... for some of us, that it's the only way we know how to live. Like you don't put up a lot of.
I'm just me.
You're not fake.
I tell people sometimes it's really important that we remember that we've got to live together forever. As Christians, we are a permanent relationship, and so we might as well get to know each other. And yet we avoid each other in a real way. Very often we don't share our pain. We don't. We're hurt by churches that don't allow people to be authentic. You know, we tend to there's a book called The Other Half of Church, where we talk about how we tend to disciple people in a left-brained way. We do programs, we memorize scripture, we memorize prayers, we talk. But the character transformation really happens in the right brain, which is creativity and experience and emotions.
Okay.
And when you've been wounded, you tend to hide your emotions, you tend to hide your experiences, and really you tend to hide your witness. I mean, our witness is our story. It's like, this is where I was, and this is what Jesus has done, and this is what's happening now. And when we share our story in an authentic way, it gives others hope.
Okay.
Because they did get to share their story. When I first started doing Making Peace and Beyond, I was scared because my story is pretty checkerboard. I mean, I have a pretty, I had a lot of woundedness.
I know, I went back and told my wife, I said, you gotta hear this gal's story. It's something else.
And I made a decision not to hide my story because I did not like what I thought of as hypocrisy in the church, which is you say one thing and you do another.
Yeah.
And so I just decided that I was just going to be who I am. But it was really scary to start sharing. And when I first started doing Making Peace and Beyond, I would see all these people that were very prim and proper lined up around the room, and I would think they are going to run out of here thinking, what is this woman got to say?
Wasn't the one of the first ones the Baptist?
Yes, it was a Baptist state
in the 70s, right?
In the 80s. And it was, I did a 2-year series for the State Baptist Convention for pastors. And
with your story?
With my story.
No.
And I would share.
You need to hear a story. I'm just saying.
You can read it in my book. Secrets from the Third Pew.
Yeah,
but it was, but at the end of my story, I would look around the room for the eyes of judgment, because that's what had happened to me along in my story, is the eyes of judgment. And I would, instead of running out of the room screaming or something, they would start to tell their story. And I think the longing that each of us has is to be known and to be loved.
Mm-hmm.
Because we can't truly feel loved until we're truly known. And we long to tell our story, but we're terrified to be known.
That's right.
You know, and it's so hard to I think, in a way, I think I told somebody not long ago, I think my job from God is to throw myself under the bus repeatedly, you know, because...
I think I know a guy like that. Maybe that's why we get along so well.
Maybe it is. It's been over 2 decades now that we've gotten along pretty well.
It's interesting because I think that we're told, you know, as you know, the no-talk rule?
Mm-hmm, the no-talk rule.
From childhood, if you've grown up in dysfunction, there's the no-talk rule. And so we're told not to tell us. All of a sudden, we want to get better. The first thing we have to do is admit that we're powerless over whatever. And then we need to talk about it. And that's a big step for people to talk about these scars. You know, what happened? Oh, nothing. I tripped and fell once when I was a little kid. You know.
Yeah, one of the things is that the biggest reason a lot of us don't tell our story is because we're protecting someone else's story.
Okay.
And, you know, I have a daughter that speaks a lot, and she tells her story because she's free to do that. And people will ask me sometimes, she'll talk about the marijuana smoke coming out of the minivan and that, and the crazy ice cubes and that we had. And people will ask me, aren't you embarrassed? And I'm like, no, that's who we were.
Right.
That's not who I was.
Right.
That's who I was. It's not who I am. Because I totally trust the healing power of Christ. He went to a lot of trouble to take away my guilt and shame. And I'm not going to walk in it because he took it.
It's kind of fun.
I am grateful today that my daughter can get up on a stage and tell her story without having to protect mine.
It's kind of funny. I got sober 46 years ago or whatever. I lose count all the time. In 1977, we'll just go with 1977. I got sober in 1977. And I tell the people my story, and there's never been a time, doesn't matter what group I'm in front of, it could be a small group, it could be a large group, when I tell my story and I say, I got on my knees and pray and ask God to set me free from drugs and alcohol, and I've been sober since that, I have never once not gotten applause
exactly.
for that. It could be because you're like, wow, if you can do it, I can do it. Yeah.
But see, that's where hope comes in. Hope comes in when you see that somebody has been in your particular painful situation with your particular wounds and that God has been able to heal them. The double bind is that all healing happens in truth. You cannot heal in a lie. And so when we're hiding, when we're lying, that part of us, I mean, we're going to be like a piece of Swiss cheese. We're going to have holes. We may have a lot of solid stuff,
okay. But
there's holes in it because of the things that we have not ever talked about.
Mom, I remember there was a time when Joyce and I went through a financial hardship, and it was in 05 when everybody was going through a hardship, and the whole thing fell apart. Everything that I've ever worked for, and we had to file for bankruptcy, and my wife told me, Joyce said, because, you know, I'll get up and church and they'll say, hey, anybody got a testimony? Yeah, we got a testimony. I got in a fight with my wife this morning. And, you know, she's like, nobody needs to know this, okay? And she's like, I, you need to swear to me that you'll never, ever mention this again. Sorry about this, Jess. But anyway, that was that because of the shame and the times we were in. I look back. You know, there's that saying, it was $1 million lesson that I wouldn't give you a dime for. But from that day on, everything changed for us financially. And we've never turned back. But it was the worst moment. I mean, my codependency was exposed. Everything that was, for whatever reason, I don't know how that happens, but it did. It exposed everything in front of everybody I love. And it was horrible. But I'll tell you what, man, it is never, we had never carried a credit card debt since that day. We've never had any debt other than our house since that day. We're doing much better, you know, now. We live in Florida, I'm retired. You know, life is good. But it was the most embarrassing thing of my life up until that point. Because I've screwed up a couple of times since then. But
shame is the most alienating. Shame makes you want to hide.
Oh,
makes you feel
inadequate. It was horrible.
It makes you feel vulnerable, and it makes you feel exposed. And people, I mean, Adam and Eve hid. they felt shame and they hid. We put on all kinds of fig leaves to try to avoid that stuff. And I think the role of the church is to provide a safe place for people to be vulnerable, okay, to have their history, to let them work out their issues with God. It isn't between me and a person. It's right. between them and God. And so I'm supposed to love them. That's my assignment from God. I'm going to love you and give you a safe space so you can work out your issues with God.
Okay.
You know, and when we don't do that, we stop being the church. Yeah. I mean, because it just is. But you and I both had, I mean, probably the most critical moment for me, there were two critical moments, two wounds, big wounds from the church that sort of took me out. Because I grew up, as you know, in the church that my grandfather built, you know, and my maiden name being Howard, my cousin thinking the Lord spread our father out in heaven, Howard is our name. I mean, right. We were in the church. I loved Jesus. I was 12 years perfect attendance at Sunday school. My parents were alcoholics, so we had this double life. We were overrun with no talk rules. I mean, when we walked out of the house, we had to have the right hat from Miss DeBerry's and the right length of glove and high, fine, thank you, how you, fine, thank you, how you, but everybody was drunk and crazy at home. And it was just a real double bind. And all of the anger and the chaos that I had, I felt when I started drinking at 13, was I felt like I had found power, I had found freedom, yeah. I had found a friend that could help me get through all of that. But I got really wild and looked for love in all the wrong places and got pregnant as a teenager. And immediately overnight, my life left. I was shipped away. I was shipped away to a home. I was forced to give up a child. I was shipped out to Seattle to live with cousins. So everything I knew went away. And I remember walking back into church with my father. And I know his mindset was that he was protecting me.
Right.
I want you to live a normal life, so I'm sending you away.
Yeah.
I just want people to know I'm standing by you. I'm walking into church with you. And I know that he wanted...
I'm here for you.
Yeah, he was here for me, but the whole thing is that the way that came down was you're not okay.
Yeah.
You can't be yourself, you know, and have a life. And I remember trying to go back to church when I was in the home, different times along the way, you know, and that there was, like, you don't fit anymore. There's no place for you. There's no place for the authentic you anymore.
Yeah.
And a couple of years after that was when integration happened. And there was a pastor in our church then that was wonderful to me. Although one of our elders would not let his daughter play with me,
right.
The pastor was right there. I mean, he was a great Christian man. I loved him, Wilford Hobby. He was a dear person. And I would talk to him about what was going on and what was going on at home. And he never pressured me to try to do anything, but he just gave me a safe place for me and God to work things out. And he loved me.
Isn't it amazing when someone does that, how much everything changes in your life when someone is... However, authentically loving.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It's required. Until you can tell your worst stuff and look into the eyes of acceptance, you will not feel reconnected to people.
And if you are sharing your story with somebody, your scars with someone, and they can't accept it, or they won't accept them, it's time to find a new person.
Yeah, because that's right. But what happened with Welford was that he called me into his office one day, and this was the second wound, and this was kind of the final axe that took me out of the church for like 20 years. Mm-hmm. I mean, in a real way.
Did I speak too soon?
Well, no.
Okay.
You spoke when you spoke. I can always go back to the subject because I know you. So what happened was he called me to his office one day, and he said, they're going to fire me. And I said...
That's it.
He said, and I'm okay with that. I thought it through. I prayed it through. And I know this is what God wants me to do. He said, I'm going to Selma and march with Martin Luther King. And he did. And he did. He was. And
junior fire.
Yeah. And he ended up going to be a professor at Union Theological Seminary in Richmond. But it was just like the intolerance of differences, the intolerance and differences of opinion, you know, has... You know, that wound just was really heart, because that was one of the best people I'd ever met.
Yeah.
And it was really, really sad. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, when I came back into the church after 20 years of struggling, and you know, and a lot of problems. I mean, I tell people I did everything wrong. I committed every sin so people would feel comfortable with theirs. You know, I mean, it was like, but when I came back into the church, it was like, I'm delighted, because I'm in a church now where authenticity can happen.
Yeah.
Where people are loved where they are.
Right. And there's people that have an old idea of how things used to be, and it could be still going on someplace else, but there are places where mm-hmm. it's okay to be free. And so, switching gears a little bit, so the people that are listening, so they have a story and they have a scar, and they okay, I'm willing to share. How does that help the community of believers or people in recovery and people in making peace? How does them sharing their scars do for the group and then for themselves? It isn't it more like, I guess what I'm trying to get at is that they're like, you become an expert. I'm an expert at dysfunctional families. I'm really good at it. In a crisis, you always say, what's that one? In a crisis, you want a bunch of addicts, because we'll
or codependents, or people who are survivors, because if anybody survives it, we will.
Right. And so it's what they bring to the table, like information on how to get over abuse, how to get set free, because there's people that really want to talk to someone that's experienced it, right?
Exactly. Well, I think it's just the shared experience of being a human. I mean, because in all of society, we are taught that there's a happy ever after here.
Exactly.
You know, that you're going to find this place where there's not going to be pain and suffering, that nobody else has the pain and suffering like you do. I mean, one of the biggest things I hear people say at Making Peace with God is, I found out I'm not alone.
Okay.
I realize that other people have suffered like I've suffered. And I think that is something that is a part of human life. And I mean, somebody said one time, the cross is a picture of what we do to ourselves and others.
Okay.
And the resurrection is a picture of what God does for us. You know, and I think that it's true. I mean, life is so full of pain and suffering, and often that's the very time when people isolate. We do exactly the backward thing. We tend to get mad at God when life hurts. We tend to isolate from each other. And instead of turning to God and clinging to Him and gathering the troops around us to prop us up, right. You know, which is what really should happen to make life work. And that's one of the things I was talking to somebody this morning about, somebody that when I met them, they felt like nobody loved them, like they were totally a misfit, that they were totally unacceptable. And somebody had sent them a song from one of our recovery groups saying, "If you could see you through my eyes."
Mm-hmm.
And it was so uplifting, and it was just tearful, you know, and just the whole realization that I can be known and loved, I can be known and loved, is so important. But until you're known, you're not going to know that.
And people thinking that scar is going to go away, but it's not. It's scar tissue. And, you know, when we forget, when people think, oh, forgive and forget, that's not biblical. You're not going to forget. You're not, like, mentally incompetent. You just don't lose a part of your brain when you forgive somebody, right?
You get to be my age, I have to question that.
I wasn't going to bring that up. But now that you did, no. But there's this scar there, and it always will be there. But it doesn't have an effect on me like it did when it was that way. And so when I forgive somebody, I'm moving into a different subject in a way. But as I forgive that person, it doesn't hurt as much. Like, I would tell my story, and the first time I went to Making Peace, and you sit around, you tell your story, and I want to find this kid's parents and beat the crap out of them after hearing their story. And Jamie, I'm the last person, and she's like, "What's the problem?" I'm like, "I'm afraid that if I start talking and telling the story, that I'm going to start crying, and I'll never stop." And your answer was,
you can't cry yourself to death.
Yeah,
you always have to go to
stupid answer. Like, yeah, we have time. We have nowhere else to go. So, and I got to it. But as I tell my story now, it's almost like a badge of honor that I went through that, survived, and now I've been able to use those things, those scars,
you're a living demonstration that your scars can be seen and you can be loved and accepted with your scars.
Yeah.
And you don't have to hide your scars.
And there's people that are like, I think I'm going to hire you, or I want to be your friend because of those scars. When we were thinking that would be the very thing that would be the rejection. And those are the things that are like, nah, man, we love your story. Sometimes a little bit too much, Chris, but not that me and you ever ever been accused of over...
being too authentic.
Too authentic.
Too authentic.
Yes, we were just talking about that. So you're the expert at empowering people to use those things and helping other people.
Well, to share their healing. I mean, God transforms us. We can't save ourselves. But if we keep showing up and we keep being honest and we keep trying to live in truth and be obedient to our best ability, then God will change us. God will transform us.
Without us even knowing.
No. So, I mean, I don't know in your life, but in my life, I'll find I did something and 6 months later, I do something, the same thing, but my response is different.
Yeah.
I've changed in it. My ideas have changed.
I remember when I first became as humble as I am, and it's never been, I've never been as humble as I am today.
One would have to know how arrogant you truly were at one point.
No, the last year I went to a thing, on a boat, it was called Braveheart. And I went there, and it was really interesting because something happened during that time. And 6 months later, people were saying, you know, you've changed. And I'm thinking, what are you talking about? They're like, you are not the same person you were 6 months ago. And I think that's what humility is. You don't realize what's actually going on, but you're doing it anyway. Would that be? You're being who you are, and you don't even know.
You don't know what's happening.
What's happening. You're just like, I think I'm just doing what I thought I was supposed to do.
And I think the other thing that happens when you have a lot of woundedness and a lot of scarring is you develop a compassion and an empathy for other people who are going through things. I mean, you know, when we can see other people as God's wounded children who just need somebody to hug them, just need somebody to believe in, just need somebody to love them.
Mm.
And they just need a safe place to be because they don't know of a safe place. And they've never had anyone. And I'm not talking about children. I'm talking about middle-aged people, older people.
And they need to be safe to be with safe people. I mean, it's not all about you. It's not all about me. It's about, okay, I need to be a safe person. And then people will be safe with me, right?
Right.
It starts with me.
It starts with you. It always starts with you. Yeah. You cannot talk another person well. And in recovery circles, we talk about walking the walk and not talk. Don't talk the talk, walk the walk.
Yeah.
You know, because we're used to people talking the talk.
Oh, yeah.
But when you see somebody...
I can't stand that.
I know you can't.
I hate that. I hate when people are like, they got all the words, blah, 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 blah. And I'm like, you've been sober for like 12 minutes now. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
People in detox always want to be a counselor. I noticed that.
Yeah. You know,
but it is. It's very much about just being yourself and allowing them to be their self. So that, because when we're defending ourselves, which people do if they're hiding, and we avoid conflict, we avoid truth that we don't want to know, that's hard to know, that's scary to know. So we want to avoid it. And you can't heal because you're defending it. And when you're defending something, you're not changing something.
So if you had, if you're talking to me and I sit down and I say, hey, I got all this stuff. I've never shared it with anybody. And someone that's listening to this right now is saying, I've never shared. I mean, I've shared some things with Jamie that I didn't share with anybody. What would you say to them would be like, what should they do today to get set free from that shame and that that unfortunately everybody sees this guy.
We're like ostriches, aren't we? Our heads in the sand, our butts in the air, and everybody sees it but us.
How do you go and say, I just want to share with you how I got that scar? What would be a first step for somebody to do that?
To share, to put it into words. Because it's floating around in your head. They can write it if they want to, if that's easier.
Okay.
But putting it into words and speaking it, you know, I mean, you know, words are hugely important because our neurological pathways are made up of words and thoughts. So we have to put words onto things to start to create a new pathway and to really look at what we're doing, look at what we're believing. And sometimes when people put their story into words, they hear things that they hadn't thought about.
Yeah.
Or they'll hear the foolishness of something they thought about themselves. Or, you know, and then to really, you know, be willing to look at that and see if it's true. Does that match with scripture? Is that who God told you you are? I mean, did God say you are totally a write-off? Did God say that there's no way back for you?
Right.
Did God say that you are an inadequate
person? Oh, no, he said, I came for you.
Yeah, I love you. I want you. Where are you?
This is
I miss
why
you.
I came. So I came. I think of, for me, it was when I told my story. I've told it to you, but a couple of years ago, I sat down, and I was trying to work into it's a new day for me, and I was writing down, I wrote a paper that I think I might have PTSD, and I wrote the whole story. I typed it out, the whole story, and I'm done with it. And it took a couple of days, and I showed it to my wife. I go, this could be the problem right here. It's all right here, everything. And I mean, I wrote everything. I am telling you, and people say, what actually really happened, Chris, since you've been down in Florida almost 4 years now, is I think when I wrote that story, and I've shared my stories before, but I actually wrote it as if it was, I just felt like God was saying, you need to write it out and take ownership of it. And I'm telling you, my life has been good, but it's gone in a new direction.
There's a peace.
Yeah, as that I've never been before.
You know, in recovery programs, we have the fourth and fifth step where you write out a fearless and searching moral inventory of yourself, and then you confess it to God and to one other person. And the reason that you have yourself, because a lot of times we haven't even confessed some of it to ourselves.
Yeah.
You confess it to God, he already knows, but that just realigns you with him. And then you confess it to another person because you have to see the eyes of acceptance in your worst moment in order to feel connected to people. So it has three things that it does in that fifth step that really do it. When I was working at the treatment center, we had people write out their full story, and then before they left, we would burn the story and plant a tree there.
Mm-hmm. Wow, that's awesome.
It was really pretty awesome, except I always wonder, well, what happens if they don't make it? We got to take the tree down. I don't know. It's
like, but so much for that.
I rode by there when I went home last time because the treatment center was in my hometown, which I really fought God about going back to. But I went back as clinical director to a treatment center down there. And that those trees had grown up to be a forest because there were so many lives that had been planted on that property.
That's amazing.
It really was.
It's a beautiful thing. I just have a thought. May I share it with you? It's developing as we go on.
Uh-oh.
We may end up cutting this out of the podcast. When I was in Revelation, it was like, there was like a tree, and there's a part in there that says there's a tree plant and stuff like that. And I was, as I was reading it, I was thinking, you know, I wonder if it's talking about like the trees that we've planted in our lives, you know, are going to, God's not going to recreate the world. He's going to renew this world. Okay.
I'm not
a theologian, obviously, but there's going to be trees. And Martin Luther King said, if I knew I was going to die tomorrow, I'd plant a tree today. And I thought, how many trees have you planted? How many trees have I planted? And that someday we'll look back and see those trees, like just like what you said, is we're going to look back when we're in heaven and it's all going to be over and everything's going to be forgotten about. And we're going to see those trees that we planted all around the world and maybe even today. And so with that, I say glory to you, God. planted so many trees deep in my life.
It's somebody called me yesterday, one of those trees, and I hadn't heard from this guy in 30 years or more than 30 years, 34 or 5 years, and 34 years, because he said, I just wanted to call you. Somebody gave him my number. He said, I just wanted to call you and thank you.
Wow.
Because you saved my life 34 years ago. And I said, I did not save your life 34 years ago, but I do know the guy who did.
Yeah.
You know, and thank Jesus that you're still sober 34 years later. He said, I remember the very day I was packing my suitcase to leave the treatment center, and you said, come and talk to me for a minute. And what you said changed my mind, and I didn't leave. And 34 years later, I was still sober. And it was just really such a touching moment, that tree has gotten strong, and then that tree has planted other trees,
So words matter.
So it was just really touching that happened.
You could be you have more words than you put I don't know if that's a compliment. No, you have so many one-liners. It's like amazing. I'm like, how can I remember all those things? So let's wrap up with one-liner. Give me a one-liner.
I can't do that one-liner.
They
talk about
it. They just don't pull up. Huh? Okay. They don't pull up.
They just come out.
They just come out.
But I think wrapping up, I would say that God doesn't care where you've been or what you've done or what's been done to you. His grace is so much bigger than that. He loves you.
Yeah.
He wants you back. Mm-hmm. He seeks you. He longs for you. You know, he's like, where are you? He asked Adam and Eve in the garden, where are you? You know, and he's still asking us that, where are you? All what I have to offer you is a life of love and peace and joy and goodness and where are you? And that's the thing that I want to wrap up with.
Amen. Amen.
How about for you?
For me, it's push into finding people that are safe, finding a community. I think people will move down to Florida 2 years later, they're back because they don't find community. You know, I'm great at making friends. I have a difficult time keeping them. You know, we have a joke at my house. I get us invited to the party. Joyce gets us invited back. So, but find a community that you feel safe in, that, like you said, that see your scars for what they are, and that see you for who you are, and that not everybody's safe, you know, and so you have to be cautious. But find a safe place, because there's freedom. And to this day, I just look at my life and say, but for the grace of God, thereby. We had a gal at the meeting last night. We went to a meeting, and her big prayer was, God helped her to get a washing machine. And it reminded me of a day that I was like, God, can you just get me a washing machine? I mean, if I could just have a washing machine, my life would be amazing. And I thought, there's people here that are just in great places. There's people in great places that you've forgotten, you forget about. And so join a group. Be involved, get in, listen to this podcast, listen to my podcast too, but listen to Making Peace and Beyond, because there's a lot of nuggets there that you have.
And old school and young school.
Yeah, old school, new school. But
old school and new school, excuse me.
Thank you. Thank you for having me, and I'm looking forward to going back to Florida in 2 days.
I tell you what, I am so glad you're one of my safe people. You've been safe for me for a long time, and hopefully we've grown together. And hopefully one of the things we have shown with our lives and is that what Satan intends for evil, God intends
for evil. We called for a 5-minute call yesterday, and it was like 45 minutes late. I didn't talk on the phone for 45 minutes.
We had to present at a meeting last night together.
Yeah, actually, yeah. Hey, can you come to the meeting last night and talk to them? Hey,
anyway,
thank you.
Thank you for joining us.
Thanks.
Hopefully you'll tune back in and into our next episode.
Hopefully they'll come back after this.
Thank you so much for joining us today. If you enjoyed this conversation, please like and subscribe, leave a review, tell your friends, and join us on all of our social media channels. Thanks again, and God bless you.